Good afternoon to my listeners on KCAA in the Inland Empire, and good afternoon and good evening to those listening to me on the live stream link. This is the Kathleen Wells Show. I'm Kathleen, and today I'm excited. I'm always excited, actually, but I'm really excited today because what we're going to do, we're going to discuss the National Summit that took place last Friday in Washington, D.C., at the U.S. National Press Club in Washington, D.C. The issue that they discussed, the summit discussed, reassessing the relationship between Israel and U.S. and the United States, reassessing that special relationship. And we're going to discuss it with one of the sponsors, a frequent guest on my show. Actually, he's one of my favorite guests. He's one of my favorite guests because I've loved his two books that he wrote, Divert and Spy Trade, Grant Smith. I'm delighted to have him. He was a co-sponsor of the National Summit on reassessing the relationship between the United States and Israel. Hey, let me ask you guys, don't you think that relationship needs to be reassessed? And if you don't think it needs to be reassessed, you don't know what's going on. You're not adequately informed. So I can't wait to bring Grant on. In fact, I'm going to bring him on right now without, well, first I'm going to tell you that Grant is the director of the Institute for Research on Middle East Policy. I should say that first. Now, hi, Grant. How are you?
Hey, how are you? It's great to be on the show. I hope none of the other guests who have been on your show are listening to hear that I'm your favorite, because that could cause some contention here.
Yeah, well, you know what dawned on me, Grant, was the fact that but for you, I would not have my mentor on the Israel-Palestine issue, Jeff Blankford.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
I don't think I've thanked you for that. Have I before?
No, but that's okay. He's a national resource that we all share and try to conserve, but you're welcome.
Yeah, this is my first time thanking you. I've had you on the show several times, and I never formally thanked you for introducing me to... Do you remember how that happened? I wrote a piece for Huffington Post and Alternate on... I interviewed Noam Chomsky, and you sent me a email saying, you got to talk to Jeff Blankford. Do you remember that?
I do remember that, yes.
That was a few years back.
Yes.
Let's talk about... Go ahead.
I was just going to say that kind of interaction can be the start of many things, and some stories like that were also told at the conference. But please go ahead.
Yeah, it's a fantastic thing, and it just dawned on me. I mean, because you know, Jeff has become my mentor on Israel and Palestine. But for Jeff, I wouldn't know what I know. I know everything I know about that, basically, at least much of what I know because of Jeff.
Well, he's been studying the issue intently for 40 years. He's got all the clippings, he's got all the files, all the major pronouncements. He follows each side with just an attention to detail and instant recall that, unless you've witnessed it, is hard to believe. So having him available has been key to many organizations and individuals who talk on this subject, many of whom probably don't acknowledge him, but one of his roles as a gadfly is to keep people honest. And just because someone might have a favorite cause or a favorite author or favorite, if you want to call it, construct for looking at the situation, if it doesn't hold up to reality, friend or no friend, he's going to call you on it.
Right, and I like what you said. He keeps people honest, and he knows the details. I've sort of adopted his, you know, his way of doing things, and so it's made me a better analyst of the issues. I feel very confident relying on his information.
His information is good, but also it's always good to pass him things and have him not fact check it, but just reality check it, because he has been around for 40 years doing apparently little else but examining all of the policies and declassification and statements and new organizations that spring up, some of them overtly, others attempting to be covert, and yeah, it's just a wonderful thing. And he played a fairly major role on one of the panels as well in Washington. But his work is definitely important.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, as you mentioned, Jeff Blankfort was on the panel. Last Friday, the National Summit held at the National Press Club in D.C. was aired actually on C-SPAN. Is this a first for you to have your summit aired on C-SPAN?
No, not really. The first time that we had a major event, not as a consortium, but the first time IRMEP ever had a major event, in the Rayburn House office building, they showed up, and it was about the Israeli Clean Break Plan, which we've talked about, and it was, they thought it was important. They aired it live. They also rebroadcast it on the radio. So if you have a gathering of, you know, experts or people who are recognizable but not necessarily, you know, on all the shows, they'll show up.
Mm-hmm. So this was a summit, as I said, held last Friday at the National Press Club in D.C., and the issue was reassessing the special relationship between United States and Israel. Your organization, the Institute for Research Middle East Policy, sponsored it. Tell us who the other sponsors were.
Sure. As you probably know, the American Education Trust, started by a number of prominent diplomats and publisher of the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, was a organizer. The Council for the National Interest Foundation, which is the education branch of an organization dedicated to looking at Middle East policy versus the national interests, and If Americans Knew, an organization founded by Allison Weir, which does a lot of excellent media monitoring to see whether all the facts are being reported, and a great website showing that indeed they're not. So those were the four organizations came together and planned to have a summit that would really take a close look at the special relationship, this relationship in which the majority, the largest portion of our foreign aid is going to a rich country, richer than many European countries, a country that has not defined borders, that has no constitution, that has been engaged in many regional wars, and whose supporters are urging the United States constantly to attack other countries that are its enemies. We thought that it would be a good thing to have a high-profile, expert-level review of that relationship in the days immediately following the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee's annual meeting in Washington, so that we could not only present some little-known facts from a wide group of independent researchers who follow this closely year after year, but also present some timely information on what they were asking of the United States and whether that was in the broader American interest. So the timing was right, and the location was a very comfortable and easily accessible place to meet, the ballroom of the National Press Club on the 13th floor. Of course, it had all the bells and whistles in terms of enabling media to come and set up and listen and get the information, and it was well attended.
Yes, it was very well attended. This is an annual event. You have it every year. And in fact, I think this was the largest crowd you've drawn. Is that correct? I was very impressed.
It kind of depends on how you look at it. I mean, the core organizers have gone and been part of other events taking place usually at the same time as the AIPAC convention, in which we were sort of information providers, but not the overall event. The overall events were run largely by other organizations. We felt that the educational component needed to be bigger and more comprehensive, and so this is the first time that we four organizations organized independently to put on an education-only program. So it kind of depends on how you look at it, but we consider it really the first national summit in terms of exclusively on the special relationship.
And your first guest, as I said, I watched it online. I've listened to it twice online, and then I listened again to a little bit right before I interviewed to sort of refresh my recollection. And the first guest was former Congressman of Illinois, Paul Finley. And his position was that the Obama administration needs to exert and take some initiative, needs to be proactive, needs to sort of like circumvent Congress. Do you think I'm characterizing what he said properly?
Exactly right. He could have come up and spoke about his experience in Congress, as Congress has been, you know, manipulated and largely captured by the Israel lobby. He could have talked about that, but instead he simply moved on and gave a status report, basically, you know, saying that the Congress is never – it's not going to be capable of any sort of regional peace, and that the executive needs to move powerfully to recapture its prerogative, which is, of course, where foreign policy is supposed to be formed, not the Congress. And so he made an impassioned plea based on his experience that if there was going to be any agreement, the president needed to step up. So it was timely, and it was it followed up by a lot of questions, but it was the first presentation.
Yeah, well, I don't think, I mean, you know, he felt optimistic that that would happen, but what do you think the likelihood is that Obama would take the initiative and execute an executive order to sort of circumvent the Congress Israel, with regard to Palestine, that Israel get out of the settlement business and abide by international law? That's essentially what he was saying.
Yeah, the analysis from other panels was basically that every time he's moved toward this, he's been burned. So a lot of the experts are quite pessimistic. But, you know, this is Finley has been around long enough and observed second terms of presidents, and I think that if he didn't think it were possible, he probably wouldn't have mentioned it. So in terms of I would just defer to to his effort in saying that he clearly believes it's possible. So apparently in that second term there's less pressure. You're not going to have to go out and get reelected, and so you know, there's a possibility. Of course, segueing into the next presentation, whether he can get anyone else to go along and actually implement something like that is a completely different question. With the surrounding network of PACs and contributors who, in many cases, although they're prohibited from coordinating, exhibit a high level of coordination that was revealed by Janet McMahon of the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, as well as some instances where, you know, outright illegal activity took place in coordinating PACs from APAC's offices. It's not supposed to be in the business of funneling money or directing money to candidates. So when you have that sort of impunity operating all around the politicians and political appointees, whether or not the president can actually act is, it's kind of an open question.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back from the break, you know who I would like to speak about is Mark Perry. I was very impressed with what he said. Do you remember when he was talking about the national interest and having skin in the game?
Yes. That was quite, as he said, his bank shot approach to it. So let's do that.
Okay, I liked his style. Okay, we're going to take a break. We're speaking with Grant Smith, who is the Director of Institute on Middle East Policy. They just had last Friday a national summit reassessing the U.S.-Israel relationship. It needs to be reassessed. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. My guest is Grant Smith, who is the director of the Washington, D.C.-based Institute, Middle East, Institute for Research, Middle East Policy. And we're just talking about the national summit that they held last Friday at the U.S. Press Club in Washington, D.C. That summit focused on the relationship between the United States and Israel, reassessing that so-called special relationship. And, you know, one of the things, when I interviewed Noam Chomsky a few years back, I guess mm-hmm. three or four years back, one of the things I talked to him about was that relationship. And he said, you know, Israel is in the national interest, in the strategic interest of the United States. And that's why you contacted me, and that's why Jeff Blankford got me straight, because he said, that's not possible. That's not right. That's not accurate. In fact, Israel is a liability. And that's something that Mark Perry was discussing in the summit. He said that You want to take it from there?
Well, sure, because he's an author specializing in military, foreign affairs, intelligence, and he just went into the fact that like Chomsky, there are 1,000 think tanks and organizations in Washington that really represent nobody, but who are there to pressure certain actions. And he gave the example of a think tank calling up the president to get them to pressure or cut ties with a place like Qatar, which has got not only U.S. energy contracts, but hosts the Fifth Fleet and all of that. And saying, no, you would need to cut ties because they're funding people we don't like in the region. And his point was, immediately after that call, the president would get a call from a real CEO saying that there are, you know, however many tens of thousands of jobs in Texas that depend upon that relationship functioning. And that the second call he would get, or the third call, would be from the Pentagon, basically saying, you know, we're the ones who have skin in the game. We're the ones who are going to fight and die if there's any broader conflict, not these pro-Israel think tanks that are always so anxious to go to war. So he made this very subtle, very piercing analysis about how, you know, all of these sort of fake organizations really have absolutely no stake in any of the policies that they're proposing, and how even though they use quite inflammatory language, that at the end of the day, it's really not going to be Israeli soldiers that are dying on the battlefield. So he was surprisingly blunt, mm-hmm. for a working journalist, in giving his presentation. And maybe you saw something different. I was kind of sitting at the table next to him trying to take it all in.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. And in fact, he said, I think he closed by saying, it is in the United States' national interest to have good relations with the Arab world. That's our national interest.
Right. And he was echoed later by Paul Pillar, who said, you know, even though this Israel lobby has gotten this legislation passed about naming Israel a special ally and all of that, that it would be better to forget about all of that and just really consider who's got interests that are anyway aligned with the U.S. that can actually help the country economically, and just go with that instead of all of these really, again, forced movements and pressure on Congress to pass all of these. They're not even alliances. I mean, they don't really obligate the Israelis to do anything. So that was also echoed later on during the intelligence panel.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jeff Blankford focused on the media, and Alison Weir gave us, I thought she said something really poignant. She talked about Alison Weir, who is the director of If Americans Knew. She devotes so much of her time and energy and all of her resources to this Israel-Palestine thing. Something that, and I want to quote what she said, other Americans who supported the Palestinians, like Dorothy Thompson, have been written out of history, forced out of office, their lives and careers destroyed, history distorted, rewritten, erased, bigotry promoted, supremacy disguised, facts replaced by fraud. Very few people know this history. The excellent books documenting what has taken place are largely out of print. Their facts and very existence virtually unknown. The majority of Americans are left with false theories that have been proclamated. Mendacious analysis have been promoted and chosen authors celebrated, others assigned to oblivion. I thought that was so profound.
Well, she speaks powerfully on that all across the country, and is involved in some way to promoting the legacy of Dorothy Thompson, who again was this journalist who did so much to alert the world to the danger of the rise of Hitler. But then when she went to Palestine and saw the sordid condition of the Palestinians after the formation of the state and decided to write about that, suddenly the usual suspects organized a campaign, and she was basically, her career was destroyed and she was cast out. Philip Weiss later echoed the same thing when he told the story of an Israeli who came to the U.S. on a tour kind of guided by Tom Friedman and Jeffrey Goldberg, and how his somewhat inferior writing is just celebrated in all the key spots, Charlie Rose, et cetera, et cetera, ad nauseum. So the same players and the same promotion of ideas, not based on the quality or accuracy, but based on whether they serve the lobby or not, is still ongoing. And the other side finds it really, you know, they're really irked whenever that's pointed out, just how much of a hold on the media and ability to promote and demote authors. It's something that also happened to some respect to Jeffrey Warrow, who has this excellent book about the pressure on presidents to continually support the Israelis to the extent that the U.S. is just in a quagmire in the region. His appropriately named book was called Quicksand, and he just went through example after example in which the Israelis were always given the benefit of a doubt to America's detriment in the end. And so none of these speakers really knew each other, and a lot of the people sitting down to a panel had never met anyone to the right or left. So this theme that came out didn't come out because everybody got together and decided that that would be the major talking point. Like you see in a lot of gatherings, particularly something as celebrated as the AIPAC event, where there's actually no independent thought occurring at all. It was really the outcome of a lot of thought and conscientious work over the years by authors and thinkers who are not celebrated, and they don't have this gigantic promotional machine behind them, because, you know, literature doesn't have a lobby like that. There's a reason, of course, AIPAC has to have a pageant and has to do all of these things and march Congress people around, because they need a show of force. But I do consider their positions to be extremely, extremely weak. And you would never see one of them, though this is a very open event, and we basically had no limits on who could come. There were absolutely no legitimate challenges to any of this from the floor, and people from AIPAC were there.
Oh, there were people from AIPAC there.
Absolutely. I saw the registration list. some of them mentioned their position at AIPAC, too. So it wasn't exactly hard to find out. But they certainly, if they had anything to offer, they certainly could have offered it. Or, you know, what you never see in this town, and it's kind of, you know, it's a reflection of the weakness of the arguments of the other side. They never want to put their people next to any real experts, because you know, they'll be decimated. And I was happy to see one thing that C-SPAN did, and that was after Netanyahu made his remarks that they needed to, you know, stay in the occupied territories to protect their eastern flank, and that Iran was, you know, going to launch ICBMs at the rest of the world with nukes on them, Paul Pilar, who was a very senior CIA official, got up and he did this absolute takedown of every point that Netanyahu mentioned, and he charitably called them all falsehoods and exposed how they were mainly, you know, incorrect and designed to hide a lot of what Netanyahu has been doing over the past few years. And C-SPAN chose to run those back-to-back, first Netanyahu and then Paul Pillar's statement at the National Summit. And that's, in my view, that's the way television and broadcast media should work. There shouldn't be this, you know, parade of people who have, you know, no knowledge but, you know, 5,000 talking points. No, there should be actual experts able to follow up and analyze these people. But unfortunately, very few of the people that you saw at the National Summit get the amount of airtime that their contribution merits.
Oh, I was so impressed with all of them. If only they could be in the mainstream media, as you said, challenging instead of cheerleading the propaganda.
Right. Right.
Because it is propaganda. It's
absolutely. I mean, just this whole thing that Iran even has a nuclear weapons program. I mean, how many times a day do we have to listen to that? And yet none of it's true. How many times do we have to listen that Israel's this great ally of the United States, and yet there is no alliance, as Ray McGovern pointed out. There is no contract that they have to do anything on the U.S. behalf, and they actually don't have a lot that they could do. They're kept out of wars because of their reputation in the region. So none of this, you know, none of these facts and analyses are routinely available. But I do want to mention that people can go to natsummit.org and download any of the audio and see links to segments, the panel segments, to C-SPAN video, and that the transcript should be up by the end of the week. So if people want to just read the transcripts, that'll be available soon as well. So it, to a certain extent, being the media, bypassing the media, getting around the mainstream media is something you do well, something everyone has to try to do, because they're really not here to help. And a lot of them have been captured many decades ago and just won't move on this issue.
Grant, mention the link again where listeners, I know some people would like to find it online where they can hear the interviews, and I recommend, or I rather suggest, and that people do listen. This was a fabulous summit. I was extremely impressed with all of the information, all of the knowledge. The experts are just fabulous. They know what they're talking about. So give the link again so that people can go online and find the podcasts or the MP3s.
Yeah, the MP3s. So the easiest way to do it is just to put in NAT Summit, NATSummit.org. And if you go to the video audio program tab, then you'll see what's up right now. And as you mentioned, it's all the MP3s are up. People can download one, two, all of them if they want. As well as links to the C-SPAN segments for HD streaming video from C-SPAN's website. We have segments for each panel. You know, the first panel, how does the Israel lobby influence Congress? Number two panel, does Israel and its lobby exercise too much influence on U.S. decisions to wage war in the Middle East? Number three, which was my panel, does the special relationship transcend rule of law? Number four, a history panel. How did the special relationship come to be? Number five, has the lobby captured political parties and news media? And finally, panel six, which was from our intelligence people, which was, is Israel really a U.S. ally? So every single one of those audio clips, most of them are about 13 minutes long. There's no fat in any of them. People got directly to the point and really talked about the core issue. They didn't wander through any stories or tell any jokes. It was a very serious and candid look at each area of their expertise. And frankly, you know, it would have been nice to have more time, but people did get to the point.
Okay, so that's the NATSummit.org, and you click on the tab, what, MP3, is that right?
Yeah. You clip on the tab that says video audio program. So it's got the program with all the video audio that goes with each part of the program.
Okay, perfect. So we're going to take a break right now, Grant. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about, does the special relationship transcend the rule of law? You're going to tell us, okay?
All right, I'll tell you.
Okay, sounds good. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Thank you. Smith, the director of the Washington, D.C.-based Institute for Research Middle East Policy, and he co-sponsored, along with a few other organizations, last Friday, a national summit at the National Press Club in D.C., reassessing the special relationship between U.S. and Israel. So, Grant, my question is this. Does the special relationship transcend the rule of law?
Well, it took me 13 minutes to get through my presentation on that very subject, and my conclusion was yes. Any time that there was an arms smuggling and espionage, and there were other cases as well, foreign agent registration, major violation of election laws, every single time, with one sole exception, they were all quashed while they were still inside the justice system, usually when they're still inside the justice system, and there was never any actual penalty for the bad behavior. And my thesis was that that's why a lot of these organizations have the power they do, and why I would argue, in contrast to many other critics, why I would argue that many of them are illegitimate, that they've gained power through illegitimate means and should not be subject of all the deference that they demand from politicians, press, and average citizens alike. So, you know, I went through the very first U.S. Interaction with the government in waiting, which was David Ben-Gurion's Jewish agency, which used money it had raised to thoroughly corrupt the United States by buying World War II surplus illegally, or in some cases stealing it. I talked about the morphing of some of those smugglers into the nuclear smuggling business, where they were stealing weapons-grade uranium and technology. I mentioned the case of NUMEC. I mentioned also the fact that there have been other technology smuggling cases which have just not been prosecuted at all. Telegy, the case of the Crytrons and Milco, which involved Benjamin Netanyahu himself. I talked about Foreign Agent Registration Act orders, that every single time an Israeli front was ordered to register under that transparency law for receiving money or guidance from Israel, that they either ignored it or shut down and basically transferred their operations to another organization so that the FARA was not being enforced. I talked about our worst performing free trade agreement, which is the U.S.-Israel trade agreement, which we import twice as much as we export, and why that agreement was so bad and why it was the first one ever signed. And that was basically because AIPAC and Israel stole the classified information of all of their opponents and used it against them. So I had a lot of talking to do. I also mentioned a recently declassified case in which a pro-Palestinian and anti-apartheid activist had died while under ADL surveillance, and how the Anti-Defamation League was being investigated for espionage and how they managed to quash that by pressuring Janet Reno. So anybody who watched my presentation probably came away thinking that they may not have seen it, but there are some extremely corrupt and powerful organizations on the Israel lobby side that are doing horrible damage to our entire system of governance and basically stripping away Americans' advice and consent and due process rights. And that a lot of these people, like Arnon Milchan, can strut around in Hollywood with complete impunity despite the grave harm they've done to the United States. So I was mentioning that while sitting next to one of the top counterintelligence officials, who later talked about how he considered Jonathan Pollard to be one of in the top four most damaging spies that the United States had ever encountered, despite the fact that there's a massive campaign to paint the U.S. government as being anti-Semitic merely because they won't pardon him and give him commutation of sentence so that he can leave the country. So it was quite an interesting panel.
Yeah, and I want to go back a little bit and focus on the fact that the producer, was he the producer, Arnon Milchan, for the Oscar winner film, The film that won the Oscar, 12 Years a Slave, did it win? Yeah, I think it did.
Yes, I believe so.
I haven't seen that movie because I don't want to see anything out of Hollywood, to be honest with you. But the movie 12 Years a Slave, the producer for that film is Arnon Milchan, who was an Israeli spy. I mean,
right.
That matters. That makes a difference, doesn't it?
Well, not in Hollywood, it doesn't.
That's disgraceful.
It is disgraceful. There's this twisted pride that a lot of Israeli smugglers in particular feel for having targeted the United States that I don't understand personally, but you also see it with the conventional arms smugglers back after World War II, a pride that they managed to steal all of this stuff. But Milchan very openly bragged on Israeli television about his role as a spy, picking up all sorts of weapons technology from the U.S. and shipping it back to Israel. Right now, he's strutting around on the stage of the Academy Awards. One of his people, who is working in one of the front companies, Benjamin Netanyahu, is at the same time strutting around on APAC's stage in front of his adoring audience. I think personally both of them should have been prosecuted for their theft of nuclear technology, and that mainstream media should talk about both of them as being major proliferators, since they proliferated from the U.S. to Israel, possibly because of the non-prosecutions, dragging the U.S. out of compliance with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. But instead, the Hollywood reporters were talking about whether Netanyahu, during his tour through Silicon Valley, would actually meet up with his old buddy Arnon Milchan, and maybe they could talk about, new targets for espionage or something.
But no
real coverage. Military.com did one short critical piece, but, most of the rest of our media is so hopeless, it's too much to think they'll ever cover it.
It's disgusting. It's despicable. It's a double standard. And I think I even read that Sidney Pollack, who was the director for Out of Africa. Hey, listen, this is the way I feel. The way Israel treats Africans who come into their country, and then you've got these directors, these Jewish-American directors and producers in Hollywood who produce films about Africa. I mean, the hypocrisy is not lost on me, the irony of it all. I mean,
well,
this man is going to win an award for producing 12 Years a Slave, and then yet Israel treats African immigrants like slaves. I mean, ironic.
I'm with you in not really being a fan of virtually anything coming out of Hollywood. I would rather watch a documentary produced for $20,000 by people who know something firsthand than any blockbuster.
Because we're watching propaganda.
Basically, a lot of it's propaganda. And I think there's been some real good work by Shaheen about real bad Arabs, how there's this ingrained anti-Iranian, anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab theme that you can observe all through Hollywood, which, they don't like being called out on. But there are a million other blockbusters they could do, spy movies about Pollard, for example, that they won't produce. So there's
exactly.
a real...
Wouldn't that be, yeah.
Well, because unfortunately, Hollywood does have such a major impact on how people think. It shouldn't be that way, but if they were willing to not leave so much money on the table, because Americans love spy movies, they could certainly do a blockbuster on Pollard, but they would rather put something together kind of smearing and making the Iranians look like decrepit, sick people. So I guess that's their choice on that one.
Well, I mean, Hollywood makes everyone look bad, even the Amish. Everyone looks bad except Jewish people. No, they make the Amish look bad. They make blacks look horrible. Arabs,
yeah, it's difficult to watch some of their products and the stereotypes and the the violence and but I'm like you. I can't watch a lot of it. I can't watch it.
No, I can't watch it anymore. I mean, and just the political aspect of it, the fact that, I mean, it really disturbs me that there are African immigrants, African refugees in Israel who are treated like third or fourth, like slaves. And this man is winning an Oscar for a slave movie. I mean, it doesn't feel good. It feels horrible to me. So let me ask you, Grant. Yeah, where, go ahead. Give me some assessment as to where you think things are going. Do you see a shift at all? Are you optimistic? Well,
yeah, there are several, I mean, getting back to the National Summit, there were several progress reports on the fact that the media is under so much pressure and has so much competition now that even stalwarts such as Tom Friedman and Wolf Blitzer have to dial down their prejudices a little bit. So that was reported as progress. The fact that so many people went to this and demanded so much, I think, is a progress report. I don't think, quite frankly, that a few years ago we would have been able to do a summit like this and have half the turnout. But people who are looking for their own information are definitely feeling the need to be active on this. And I think there is a glimmer of hope. Just again, I think we talked about the fact that there was so much opposition to the Syria attack plan, and there's so much support for the Iranian approach through diplomacy rather than the gun barrel. But I think there is hope, but you know, the other side is always there. And one thing that was very noticeable in Gareth Porter's presentation is that the Israelis and their lobby are constantly going to be throwing provocations against the wall until one of them sticks. And you know, his assessment is that most of them are fabrications, you know, false flag fabrications designed to tripwire the U.S. into something. And if there doesn't seem to be any law against them trying over and over and over again to do that, but then Americans have gotten wiser and are much more quicker to call out and ridicule the lobby and its board patron every time they try to pull something like that. So that in and of itself, hearing a group of serious people all the way up to Phil Giraldi, who said that he doesn't doubt that they're trying to put something together right now that tripwire the U.S. in the conflict, you know, it puts people on notice. And I don't think people have been as on such heightened alert as before. But now it's become obvious that these people are dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And so tell me, what is the vision for the conference next year? What would you like to see happen?
Well, I have to tell you that between the four organizations, there's a lot that's been done and a lot that's been decided and a lot of it that's still up in the air. So as you might imagine, anything involving more than two can be subject to a lot of planning meetings and a lot of deliberation before any public announcements are made. But, you know, with that said, of course, audience, attendees, speakers, and organizers alike were excited to do something bigger. Phil Giraldi at the end mentioned his desire to see a two-day conference with a lot more smaller panels and, you know, a lot more speakers, which, you know, unfortunately we probably had too many for such a small time slot. So I think the general vision is to be big and get bigger. So that's pretty much what I know for now.
Well, I'm sure that's going to happen. I mean, I've seen the evolution with this summit that you've put on. I've seen it evolve over time, and it's getting very popular, and it's getting a lot of exposure. And I'm happy for you. I'm glad this is happening.
Well, just to mention some of the early iterations, Allison Weir and Jeff Blankford and myself were all out standing next to Massachusetts Avenue in front of APAC's event in what looked like was imminent rain with a megaphone and a tablet on a tripod trying to explain things to people on the grass. So perhaps
it
has.
Kidding?
I'm not kidding you. You know, again, those weren't national summits, and those were low-budget affairs where the education component was an afterthought, but I guess you have to start somewhere.
Well, you know, Grant, you're always welcome on the Kathleen Wells Show. You're one of my favorite guests. I mean, but for you, as I said, I wouldn't know what I know about Israel via Jeff. So I'm grateful to have you on the show. You know you're always welcome. So I want to thank you again.
Well, I thank you, and this has been wonderful talking to you in all of these programs, and I'm not going to let you keep interviewing me by air. We're going to have to get together at some point here and compare notes in Washington, so keep that in mind.
Sounds good to me. So we were just speaking. My guest was Grant Smith. His books are Spy Trade and Divert. I've read them both. They're both excellent. They're chock full of information, declassified documentation. Grant Smith is the director of the Middle East, the Institute for Middle East Policy. Check out that site. It's are you still on the line, Grant?
Yeah, it's Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy, IRMEP.org.
IRMEP.org. Check it out. Thank you, Grant. I'll see you soon, okay?
Okay. Great being on your show. Thanks, Kathleen.
Bye-bye. Thank you, KCA listeners. We were just speaking with Grant Smith, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.